Mr. Leary, reel 6.
Let's talk about the duty watch. When you were on duty watch, what kind of activities did you get involved in?
You might be a fireman for the 24 hours, or you might be what they call canteen duties. That was going round and collecting the glasses and all that sort of business. Or you might be what they call baggage party. If any ship was paying off, you see, you'd have to go out, and maybe they'd pay off in Dundee or Liverpool or something like that, and we'd come down by train. Well, you'd have to go with the big heavy transport down to the railway station and help them to load all the gear and all that sort of business.
Oh, I see. Yes, good. Anything else that a duty watch might have to do?
Well, in other words, you was there for anything that required you for. Anything that might turn up.
Okay. Right. I'd like to talk a little bit about sort of life in the barracks generally. And wanted to start off by talking to you about what sort of arrangements you had for washing and drying your clothes.
Well, there again, it came under part of your training was learning how to wash clothes. And it was down in the basement of one of these blocks was the big wash house, where they had a big recess business. Well, a place about, 12 inches by 8 inches wide, and hot and cold water, like a big bowl, you might say, where you could wash your clothes. You used to wash your flannels, wash your underclothes and socks and towels, things like that. Well, you'd wash them, and then they had a spinner, you see, for drying your clothes, you know, spinning all the water out. And then you all waited for one another. This would be during, like, working hours, training hours, you see. You'd all wait for one another until you was all ready, and then the PO would take march you see, up to the drying room. They used to always say drying room, but it was drying gown, drying ground. And you'd take your clothes there, and you had strops. Well, they used to make strops out of bits of rope, you know, where they might be 8 or 10 or 12 pieces in a bit of rope. Well, you cut them about 18 inches long, and then you pulled all these out loose, you see, and there was no clothes pegs or anything like that. You used to have to tie what clothes you was drying on the line. And round this place, drying ground, there used to be big wire netting. You couldn't get over it to get under it. And you'd hang your clothes there, and you had to come through a little door, a gateway, to get in. Well, that was a pensioner's job, being responsible for that place, you see. Now, you couldn't get in and you couldn't get out without passing the pensioner's place, the doorway. You had a little hut there, you see. And you'd go and you'd hang your clothes up, tie them up with these strops. Now, if you had some clothes that was in there before and they was dry, you'd get them down, you'd be going out. Now, as soon as you get near the door, the pensioner would be there, and you'd have to show him your clothes with your name on the back, you see. Your name would be on, and you'd like, oh, okay, but you could go out. But I didn't tell you before that at the time when you got your clothes kitted up, they give you a small block of wood with your name cut into it, same as me, J. Leary, you see, and that was cut into the block of wood. So there was two recesses there. One had black marking ink in it, and the other had white marking ink. And if it was your whitish clothes, such as your flannels, and your navy collar and inside your hat and all like that. You'd dip it into the black marking ink and stamp your clothes on, you see, the inside. And if it was black clothes, you'd get white, you know, according to. Now, when you was coming out, you see, all your clothes had to be stamped with your name on. And if you hadn't got your name properly stamped on, you had no claim to that. And if you hadn't got your name on, you had no claim, you see. And if anything was pinched, you get your pinch part of your clothing off, and they try and scrape it off with pen knives or get it off with some kind of oil or something or another and put their own name on. Oh, there was some... You met every kind of people in the world you met in barracks. Mm.
So one question I wanted to ask you about washing. You said it was part of your training to be taught how to wash. Were there some special techniques attached to washing naval clothes?
No.
I wondered why they thought it necessary to teach you how to wash.
No. Well, you know, well, I know, that there's many men, especially in them days, because women didn't go to work so much in them days, and they used to do their own washing in their own house. They hadn't got these, what you call them?
Washing machines. Washing machines.
No, not the washing machines, wash houses, you know, on the road.
Laundrettes.
Laundrettes. There was no laundrettes in them days. And if a woman didn't do her own washing, she used to get some other woman to come in to do the washing and pay them so much for doing the washing for the day, you see.
But, apart from washing your clothes, you presumably were also responsible for their general sort of care and maintenance.
Oh, sure you was. And if you wasn't, God help you. Because if you was anything short, you had to get it. Now, every so often, even when you was under training, you used to have a kit inspection. They used to take you into one of these basements, all the cloths like, and you'd lay your hammock down first and lay a bit of a palliasse on top of it and your blanket on top of that and all your gear down then. All your blue things had to be on one side and all your white things on the other side, and your comb and your brush and a bit of utensils like that you'd lay in the middle. Well, he'd wait until you all got them all down, and then he'd come round each one and he'd have his book with your name at the top for one page with everything you should have, you see, and he'd go along. So, and I go through all of your gear. Now, if there was anything missing, you had to get it. You had to go later on, like I think it was Saturday mornings when you could get it. You'd have to go down to the victualling yard and you buy it. You see, you buy it, you make a chit out what it is, a bit of paper, like with your name and number and all like that. Or you could buy it for cash, you see. Or you could buy it stopped out of your pay.
So you had to replace anything you lost from out of your own pocket.
That used to happen while you was under training. Now, when you'd finish your training, you was going to a ship or going out of the barracks with all your gear. It was inspection again. And you was all checked on everything that was there. And if you hadn't got it, you had to get it before you could go out of the barracks.
Was there any way you could avoid replacing clothing that you'd lost?
Well, they used to try and do a bit of a fiddle, but you couldn't because your name had to be showing up. You see, it all had to be showing on the thing that you had on the floor. Your name had to be there on the top of it, so that whoever was inspecting it wouldn't have to go to it and pick it up to look for the name, you see. It had to be showing. And if the name wasn't showing plain on it, you'd have to get it looking plain, stamp it, re-stamp it.
Was it ever possible to sort of, you know, slip the petty officer half a crown who was doing the inspection
I never seen that.
You didn't come across that?
No, because it wasn't worth it, you see. Because if you hadn't got it, you only had bare necessities, you see, and if you hadn't got it, you'd be depriving yourself. Now, it was the same when you come in barracks, you see, the same thing used to happen again. you had to put all your clothes out and inspect to see everything was there when you come in, Barry.
Let's talk a bit about discipline. That's something that interests me very much. Whilst you were at Devonport here and getting your first taste of the Navy, what were the most common offences?
Well, the most common offences would be not getting, after you'd gone ashore, not getting back on time, breaking your leave. That'd be the worst offence, I think. The commonest offence, that.
Mm-hmm. And how was that punished?
Oh, so many days pay stop and so many days leave, according to how long you was late.
Yes. What were the most extreme offences, most serious offences?
Well, the most serious offence was breaking your leave. Wait, say you was going home on Christmas leave and New Year's leave, and you were supposed to be back about 10 days' time, and you didn't turn up in 10 days. Well, when it got about 12 days and you hadn't turned up, the barracks authorities used to ring the police up, if you lived in, we'll say, Manchester or some other town, they'd ring them up and make inquiries about, had the police seen you, did they know? Well, then most probably a detective would go round to their house, you see, and find out that, or they'd get to know, watch and wait, and perhaps see him in civilian clothes. Well, then they'd ask and tell the police that he'd was supposed to be reported back, you see, to barracks on such a date at such a time, and he hadn't shown up. Would they take charge of the case? Well, the police then would arrest him, you see, and he wouldn't go before a judge for that, unless he'd done some crime while he was on leave, you see, a civilian crime. He'd be tried then, but if he'd only broken his leave, the police would hold him there.
Did you have any personal experiences of this problem, being absent?
For myself?
Yeah, for yourself.
No.
While you were at Devonport?
Never.
You always went to Manchester for your leave and you always went home strictly on time?
But that's how I'm coming on to tell you about how you get to the worst crime sort of thing and how you get punished the worst. It's because after about 2 days, the police had hauled you there, and they'd send one petty officer and two seamen up to, we'll say, Manchester, where you might have been. And they'd get victualling allowance to get things at the restaurants on the train or in the restaurants at the stations, like for food, for dinner and like that. And same coming back when they pick the man up at Manchester, they'd bring him back like the train, and he'd get food like same as you would, until you got right back into Keyham Barracks. Now, he'd come up the following morning then before the officer of the watch, you see. They used to call him Jimmy the One, a 2½ ring bloke. You'd go before Jimmy the One, and according to how many hours or how many days you was beyond the time that you were supposed to be on leave, you got so many days pay and so many days leave stopped, and, well, a lot of your uniform might have been stolen in the barracks while you've been away. And all this expense of the petty officer and the two seamen going to Manchester to be trained, picking you up, victualling allowance, food and all like, and bringing you back, all this used to be put against you as a debt, a crown debt. So you used to have to have this money stopped out of your pay until it was all clear, until you'd paid your bill, as you might say. And they'd send you up to an old battleship that used to lay up on the trot up at the near Saltash Bridge in the River Tamar, and it used to be anchored in the middle of the river. and you couldn't go ashore or anything like that. You was what they call second class for conduct and second class for leave. And you'd stay there until your bill was paid.
Was the Vigorous a sort of naval prison then?
It wasn't a naval prison, but of course if you was many days who practically deserted the Navy, they'd fetch you back and put you in what they call the glass house. But if it was offence that you'd done on a ship that was somewhere near Liverpool or something like that, you'd go to Walton Jail at Liverpool, a civilian jail, and serve your sentence.
Yeah.
Well, it was Christmas leave. It was either Christmas or New Year. The first Christmas I'd been in the Navy, and went on leave, and I think it was 10 days leave we got at Christmas or New Year, and you had to be back at barracks for 7 o'clock on the morning that your leave expired. So you'd have to leave Manchester then via train that left at 7:30 in the evening, and it used to get into Plymouth North Road station about 5 o'clock on the following morning. Now, there used to be another train that used to leave at midnight from Manchester, but that wouldn't get to Plymouth North Road until 10 o'clock the following morning. So if you were supposed to be there at 7 o'clock and you'd got this other train, the midnight train, you'd be so many hours late adrift. And right enough, the naval police used to be waiting for that train coming in, and if you hadn't got your pass, or if you had your pass and you were supposed to be in barracks at 7 o'clock that morning, they'd grab you, you'd go in the transport, and they'd take you into barracks, you see, that they'd caught you breaking your leave, you know, a bit of a feather in their cap.
See. Were you punished on this occasion?
No, I was on leave, and I come back to, coming back on the train, the 7:30 train. The train was then to be cut in half, I think it was at Shrewsbury or some place like that, and half of it was going on to Plymouth. Well, it was really going to Penzance, but it would go through Plymouth, and the other was going to Cardiff. And you know, at that time in the night, you'd think you was in the right part of the train, but I wasn't. I got in the part that went to Cardiff instead of being in the other part that went to Plymouth. So, any road, when I got there next morning, it was this year, 10 o'clock I got in, and should have been at 7. So I had to go before the officer of the watch, and he said, what happened? Anything to say? And I said, yes, sir. I said, it was very foul.